Welcome back, everyone, to the Pro Football Weekly Podcast. I am your host, Arthur Arkish, joined this week by Hub Arkish, sitting in for Eric Edholm, who is getting a little bit of time off now that we're putting the finishing touches on the Pro Football Weekly Draft Magazine. We got the Super Bowl in the rearview mirror, and Hub has been nice enough to sit in and talk a little bit of football, because although the offseason is officially underway, Hub, there's big news happening. I figure we react to the Super Bowl real quick because you were in Minneapolis. But we got big stuff to get to as well. You probably can remember Bill Parcells and Bill Belichick pulling what Josh McDaniels did earlier this week before McDaniels did. But before we get to that, tell everyone how you're doing. You're back from Minneapolis, and what'd you think about taking in that game? One of the more fun ones you've seen, I believe.
Yeah, and I think that's a great way to put it. It was one of the most entertaining.
From your column. I hope it was a great way to put it.
Oh, I hadn't thought about that. Okay. I mean, it was one of the more entertaining, more fun games to watch. I don't know that it was one of the best Super Bowl games ever, only because, you know, call me old and cranky, but I like a little defense with my football, and there was none. And it was particularly disappointing that the Eagles defense, as well as they played all year long and as highly regarded as they were, had no answers whatsoever for the New England Patriots, who broke pretty much every postseason offensive record there was to break in that game. The two teams combined put up the most total offense in a game in NFL history. That's right, not just a Super Bowl, not just a playoff game, the most total offense in a single NFL game. And I'm not sure that that should happen in the Super Bowl. I think you want to see both offense and defense. What was so historic and memorable about last year's game was the fact that the Patriots had 3 points as the third quarter was coming to an end. The Atlanta defense had arrived. Then the Patriots defense took that game over in the second half and held the Falcons still while the Patriots came back to win it. This one was more like a touch football game. It was more about let's just throw the ball around the schoolyard and see what happens. So it was entertaining. It was fun to watch. Officiating, unfortunately, became involved. Hopefully the conspiracy theorists, well, they'll never be done, but they should be, because there were 3 pivotal calls in the game. All 3 of them went against the Patriots. I think at least 2 of them probably should have been called in their favor. But that's not an excuse for losing. The Eagles were the better team. They deserved to win the football game. Just with that rundown, I guess, when you have that much to talk about and observe, it certainly makes for big entertainment at the end of the day. That's what the Super Bowl is supposed to be.
Hub, what about those narratives of all the Patriots conspiracy theorists who are convinced that the deck is stacked toward the Patriots? If those calls didn't go their way, what are they going to do? They're going to have to come up with a new reason to hate the evil empire, I guess.
Well, yeah, as we know in all walks of life these days, they don't go away, unfortunately. They just find new conspiracies to create. But the bottom line is that anybody who's ever covered an NFL game knows that the Philadelphia Eagles were in an illegal formation on the touchdown catch by Nick Foles. They only had 6 guys on the line of scrimmage.
That's Philly special, as they called it.
Well, I'm sure the way it's written up, they're supposed to have 7 on the line, but Alshon Jeffrey was not. And so that should be flagged.
Alshon maintains that he talked to the line judge that if you get clearance, if there is a dialogue that occurs, those go uncalled frequently. Now, you're on the sidelines often. Yeah. You would see that firsthand. Is that true?
In that position as the flanker, Alshon looks to the side judge. He motions to him. The side judge motions back. That did not happen. Alshon Jeffrey never looked in that direction. Now, whether he talked to him coming out of the huddle, that I can't say. At the end of the day, whether he talked to him or not, it doesn't matter. He was not lined up properly. But he is right that those things get missed a lot. You know. And the reality is, had it been called, they would have kicked the field goal. They'd have gone to the locker room up 6 at halftime. Would it have changed the outcome of the game? I don't know. But at the end of the day, they got a call that they shouldn't have. It went against the Patriots. The conspiracy theorists weren't there to save New England. Then you come to the 2 questionable touchdown catches.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any question that the Clement catch has been overturned every other time it's been called in the last couple months. And so, again, I don't know how suddenly they're going to defend that one. Al Rivers river on whoever wants to. I don't necessarily agree with the interpretation of the winning touchdown from Ertz. I know everybody said he took two or three steps and became a runner. No, he didn't. He takes one long step and he dives. The ground caused that ball to come out. He did not complete the process of the catch. By the way, the rule is poorly and incorrectly written. Now, right. That said... Right. I don't have an objection to it. I mean, because I do think I think it's the rule that's bad. I do think it was a touchdown. So, you know, you can't complain about that. But anybody who wants to continue to be stupid and whine and say that there's some conspiracy that benefits the Patriots, that had to be shot all to hell in that game on Sunday.
He's Hub Arkish. I'm Arthur Arkish. This is the Pro Football Weekly Podcast. Check us out on iTunes. Give us a rating and a review after you've subscribed, of course. We got Dan Mott, the producer, in studio here at WCIU. And a big thank you to all you for joining us. We're talking a little bit of Super Bowl. We know you guys watch the game, and you can probably remember all these plays crystal clear. We're not going to rehash a play-by-play. But, Hub, I think the two points that are worth discussing, I'm sure there's more than two, but the ones I'd like to focus on. And let me just add that it's pretty clear to me that Roger Goodell or the NFL, it's clear the NFL wanted to get a jump start on the offseason of intending to fix the catch rule, because as you said, they went against the way they were being called in the regular season, but I think most people were pleased to see what looked like a touchdown catch be called a touchdown catch. It just was a little odd to do it on the biggest stage as opposed to waiting to the offseason, when Roger Goodell said last week, quote, "We have a chance to get this right," and acknowledge that they have a problem on their hands. So with that being said, the two angles to me that continue to emanate and are very interesting from this one, Malcolm Butler, of course, and not just Malcolm Butler, but this whole should Bill Belichick be roasted for this? It's clear that he made a mistake. I mean, look at what Nick Foles did to the Patriots defense, and they lost the Super Bowl, and they were getting gashed in the secondary. It's hard to argue that Johnson Badamose or Eric Rowe were going to give him a better chance to win that Super Bowl than having Malcolm Butler out there would. But I guess the part that interests me, that I'm curious to get your take on, if we're going to constantly praise Bill Belichick for winning five Super Bowls the Patriot way, which is in part being absolutely stubborn and knowing he's the smartest man in the room, even maybe in the rare instances when he's not, he's going to go down fighting his point. Don't we also have to acknowledge that that's the way he lost this Super Bowl, but not necessarily fault him? If you win five that way, you can't really fault him for losing number six by using the exact same MO that got you here.
You know, Arthur, I guess my response would be that the reasonable and intelligent thing to do would be to be a little more patient and form no conclusions until we find out why Malcolm Butler actually didn't play in that game. Because sure. At the end of the day, we don't know. Bill Belichick didn't suddenly get stupid. I mean, you know, he knows damn well that Eric Rowe did not give him a better chance to win than Malcolm Butler did. There had to be a reason for what he did. And at some point, It will come out. You know, you've got Malcolm Butler denying that there was any rules violations, that there was any missed curfew, that there was any marijuana. I don't know. I'm not accusing him.
Free agent to be, we should add, and this could potentially really hurt his price tag. So it kind of complicates the potential timing of getting the truth in this story.
It's going to hurt it a lot more if he gets caught lying about that. So to come out with that definitive a statement, knowing that if somebody's out there who can punch a hole that you don't know. So at the end of the day, listen, I don't think Eric Rowe cost the Patriots the Super Bowl. As a matter of fact, when it looked like Alshon Jeffrey was going to take the game over, Matt Patricia and Belichick, as they did, made a simple but brilliant coaching move. They moved, you know, Stephon Gilmore over, and Alshon Jeffrey disappeared. That's why, you know, Chicago Bears fans, you know, need to take a step back and realize, no, the Bears didn't make a mistake. Ryan Pace didn't make a mistake. Alshon Jeffrey is not a number one receiver. He may be a one and a half. He's probably better than a two, but he can be taken away when you want to. Now,
which he was both by sides, his college roommate. That's what Hub's alluding to. You make the switch to Stephon Gilmore, and he was
once Gilmore
was
started covering him all
half.
Over the field. You never saw him.
Yep. Problem is, then they didn't have answers for Zach Ertz and Nelson Aguilar, but I don't think that would have been up to Malcolm Butler. He's not a nickel, and they've got Malcolm Jenkins for that very reason.
Yeah, and I don't think Nelson Aguilar killed him all that badly. I mean, he had nice numbers, but that's what the Patriots do. They let teams complete passes between the 20s.
I said Malcolm Jenkins. Excuse me. Of course, I meant Devin McCourty and Patrick Chung. I apologize.
Yeah, you know, so this is where there's this narrative out there that Doug Peterson took Bill Belichick to school, and that's not what happened. I mean, if you watch the game, Both coaches had their moments. Both coaches made their mistakes. Doug Peterson got remarkably lucky because every gamble he took paid off. I don't know what Belichick was doing, going for it fourth and five at the Philadelphia 35-yard line at the end of the first quarter. I mean, there was some strange stuff out there, you know, and most of it worked for the Eagles, and most of it did not work for the Patriots. But but all these people who are enshrining, you know, Peterson and saying, oh, he took Belichick to school, that decision to go for two in the first quarter damn near killed him. I mean, you know, he was down a point. Then he was forced to do it again and failed again. I just don't believe you ever go for two until the fourth quarter. You're always chasing points that way. I know a lot of smart coaches who agree with me, and Peterson got away with one, is what happened there. You go back, how many times is Steven Gostkowski going to miss two extra points in the same game? I mean, you know, at the end of the day, it's an eight-point margin, but that's a little misleading because you're not necessarily in the situation that Brady was in when the strip sack came that set up the final score. A lot of things going on there. I thought that the players on offense had an outstanding day. I thought both coaching staffs had their moments, took their risks, and made their mistakes. I thought the officiating was below average, which is kind of unfortunately what we came to expect the second half of this season. And at the end of the day, the only thing that really matters is that it was wildly entertaining, and that's the way the game should be. And I realize Patriots fans probably didn't enjoy the outcome. I mean, one of my favorite, play-by-play guys of any sport in any medium is Pat Foley, who does Chicago Blackhawks games on TV, whose signature line when the Blackhawks games end are, we hope you enjoyed the broadcast, we know you enjoyed the outcome. Mm-hmm. Or if the Hawks lose, we hope you enjoyed the broadcast, even if you didn't enjoy the outcome. Obviously, Patriots fans didn't enjoy the outcome, but my suspicion is everybody enjoyed that broadcast.
Yeah, no doubt about it. It was awesome. Compelling football, or at least compelling offensive football. And then how do you not like the storylines? You got Doug Peterson, the backup quarterback. Frank Reich, the backup offensive coordinator, and I got to credit Peter King. I had the backup quarterback part with Nick Foles, but he connected the dots with Doug Peterson, the former backup quarterback, and Frank Reich. So it was kind of the trio of those backups who just were almost perfect. You said Peterson wasn't perfect. Foles was pretty darn close to perfect, and that's kind of my next point here. The Eagles are in a fascinating situation, but I want to remind everyone, in case it's needed, no one knows better about the value of holding on to your quarterback until the imminent training camp injury or later early in the season than Howie Roseman, who, of course, you know, flipped Sam Bradford for number one a couple years ago. So this rush to get Nick Foles traded because he's, you know, his value's never been higher as the Super Bowl MVP, and the new league year is going to begin in a handful of weeks, and who's going to give up the most for Foles? We're not going to, if he has the stones, Howie Roseman, that is, to trade Foles at all, and I'm not sure he will because Carson Wentz, of course, recovering from a December ACL tear. There's no guarantee he's going to be good to go early in the season. It's not happening before August, I wouldn't think.
Let me back up for a second because I wasn't aware of the whole Peter King conversation. It's cool, right? Backup quarterback thing. Well, yeah, but it's missing.
I didn't make the connection.
It's missing part of the story. Frank Reich actually had one of the original Nick Foles moments.
Oh, I know. The huge comeback, of course.
The greatest comeback in NFL playoff history after Jim Kelly went down.
Yep.
So he certainly knew how to prepare, you could argue, Nick Foles for what he was about to experience. The other thing, Arthur, that I keep pushing this just for fun because I think it'll probably piss off some fans and then we can have a fun debate about it, is the simple reality is at this stage of their careers, Nick Foles is a better quarterback than Carson Wentz.
This is Hub's hottest take.
Well, it's fact.
Hold on.
You can't argue the numbers.
I meant to tweet this or write this or do something. I think I forgot. But we should point out, and Hub is pushing this hot take, and he will again in a moment. But we should point out that he was pushing it before the game. He wrote the column on either Friday or Saturday before the game. Why should Nick Foles be intimidated? And now, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. I'll let you get back to your point. But that should be noted because a lot of people may want to play Monday morning quarterback on it. I didn't see anyone else write that column before the game. So I'm sorry. Continue.
Well, it's because I've actually followed his career fairly closely. In addition to Pro Football Weekly, I am part of the broadcast of national... I'm part of the national radio broadcast of NFL games for Westwood One. Do sidelines on Sunday and Monday nights in playoffs. And back in 2013, I happened to get three Philadelphia Eagles games as the Nick Foles story was unfolding. And I was so impressed by this guy. And the reality is that his 2013 season was better than Carson Wentz's 2017 season by any measure of the numbers. The win-loss records were almost identical. Foles came out of nowhere. Wentz did not. And so there was no reason to expect that Foles would give them any less than Wentz did, and he didn't. And so now as you look going forward, you talk about how smart Howie Roseman is looking these days. Is it a slam dunk that you want to keep Carson Wentz and get rid of Nick Foles? The answer is probably yes. I'm not suggesting that I wouldn't. I think Wentz is younger, bigger, more athletic, has
more
a chance to do more for you.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think Wentz is still the guy of the future. But the reality is Foles is the better player right now based on what the two of them have accomplished in the NFL. Now, when you talk about the timing of the deal, because you can't afford to keep both of them, the other thing is that one of the way they got Foles back, he's got $11 million salary coming in 2007 and 18. So,
no, it's 19. He's very reasonable in 18, I believe, and then the contract gets a little more bloated. I'm pretty positive about that. We'll double check that one.
But either way, the point is, for a number of reasons, you're not going to keep Foles. It's wasted value. I mean, if Carson Wentz is the guy, and he should be, you got to deal Foles. Where I would argue your point a little bit, though, Arthur, is that Howie Roseman got lucky on Sam Bradford. He wasn't looking to deal him. What happened is they go for Wentz, and then all of a sudden Teddy Bridgewater goes down. And so there's a special occurrence. There's an opportunity that wasn't there prior. Nobody else was offering.
No, that's exactly my point, though. No quarterbacks are going down in March. They're going down in August. Teddy Bridgewater 2 years ago, Ryan Tannehill last year.
Well, but here's my point. What if one doesn't go down this August?
Well, now you see which one stinks early in the season. You still have until Halloween to potentially flip Foles.
But you're not going to get as much if somebody isn't desperate. Mm-hmm. I think that this is a different situation. I think Nick Foles' value has never been higher. And if you're committed to dealing him, I'm not so sure you don't get that deal done the first day of free agency. Because who would you rather have, Kirk Cousins or Nick Foles? Because you get Nick Foles, you get him under contract.
Right. Yeah.
I think that if you're going to deal him, you got to look at that right now, and that's where you're going to get the most for him. Unless again, there's a disaster. You know, if a Bridgewater or a Tannehill goes down in August, then somebody may be game. But I don't think you can count on that. So I think that the best way to get the most value is certainly to start to prepare that deal right now.
All right, it's going to be fascinating. Obviously, one of the bigger storylines to follow. It's interesting, a Super Bowl winning quarterback just a couple years ago in Peyton Manning retires. Now a Super Bowl MVP is either going to revert to a backup or be traded the following offseason. So when I have a little bit more time, and guys, I hopefully will soon, the Pro Football Weekly Draft Guide goes to the printer Friday. It will be on newsstands March 6th. So put it on your calendars, or heck, you don't even have to worry about that if you head to profootballweekly.com and you can order it. Sign up for our draft newsletter while you're there. Hub's signaling me like we're done. We're not done yet.
No. I got another question. Yep. You just raised another point for me in this whole conversation about what you do with Foles. We're going to do a lot of draft work for you in the coming weeks, but the magazine is going to bed literally within 24, 48 hours of our talking. So we've already begun our homework in depth. Mm-hmm. And I would ask you this question, Arthur. Is there a quarterback in this draft that you'd rather have than Nick Foles?
Yeah, I think I like... I think Baker Mayfield is going to be a special NFL quarterback. I've made up my mind on that. I'm not acting like it's a slam dunk, but I think he's got that it factor. So I would rather have Baker Mayfield than Nick Foles, even a Super Bowl MVP Nick Foles. And I think Darnold has some special traits to him. Rosen scares me, and Allen scares the hell out of me. But those two, Darnold and Mayfield, I think I'd rather have.
And Darnold has been horribly inconsistent.
Yes, no doubt. But he's also was redshirt sophomore. I mean, he's a young guy. Foles has been in the league for 5 years now after being a mid-rounder, so we know a lot more about him.
There is no right or wrong answer to the question. I'm not looking for anything definitive here. Mm-hmm. I agree that Mayfield is the best of this group. Mm-hmm. But if I'm looking for a quarterback and I can get one who's ready to go right now, who's still got the 6-7 best years of his career ahead of him and is not unreasonable price the next couple of years as a starting quarterback, I would much rather have Nick Foles than one of these quarterbacks, because any one of these quarterbacks is a gamble. Nick Foles is a known quantity at this point. He's coming off a 2013 Pro Bowl campaign. He's coming off a 2017 Super Bowl MVP campaign. To me, again, I'm just talking about the timing of when you move him. I think you move him before the draft.
But what about those 3 or 4 years in there, Hubbard? They did not exist.
He didn't play.
Right. And Andy Reid decided he was expendable. He was on the Andy Reid's quarterback depth chart, and he got rid of him. Jeff Fisher. Foles was in with the Chiefs for a while.
But
he was with the Chiefs for a while.
Yeah, but Alex Smith was the starting quarterback. It's not like he was, you know, considering Foles. Andy Reid was the guy who wanted him there in case he needed him. Mm-hmm. If you go back to what happened to him with Chip Kelly, he comes back in 2014. He starts out hot again. They're 3-0. He throws 6 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. Then he starts to struggle a little bit. He throws, I think it was 8 touchdowns and 7 picks. They get to 6-2. And he's still, on the season is following 2013. He breaks his collarbone, and then during the off season, Chip Kelly trades him, to the Rams. Well, he gets to the Rams, and as everybody knows, that's where quarterbacks' careers go to die under Jeff Fisher and Rob Boris. We've talked about this. That's the same coaching staff that 1 year ago. Had what did they have? Let's go over the list.
Yeah, we did a piece on it this week. Yes, it went Jared Goff, Case Keenum, and Nick Foles. So you've got 2017's most improved player, 2017's biggest free agent bargain, and 2017's Super Bowl MVP.
Yeah, the
so
fact that
take a bow, Jeff Fisher. That's hard to do, even if you're trying.
The fact that Nick Foles' career hit a speed bump in St. Louis is the norm. It's not the exception. So there's not really a lot negative to find in his career, except for an unfortunate injury and then a shaky decision by Chip Kelly, and then a couple years where he had to overcome, being Chip, being Jeff Fisher's quarterback.
All right, good news, guys. Hub has just convinced me that he has at least a column on Nick Foles in him, so you'll be looking for that at the site as soon as things slow down on the draft magazine. We still have another huge story that we want to get to, and only about another 10 minutes left on the Pro Football Weekly podcast. Josh McDaniels. I mean, I think that's all I have to say. It was nothing short of stunning. We had just put in a long day in the office trying to get this draft magazine done, and the news comes through at about 6 o'clock Tuesday night, 3 hours after the Colts had introduced him as their head coach and had scheduled a news conference for the following day. Josh McDaniels is returning to the Patriots as offensive coordinator. I mentioned Bill Belichick and Bill Parcells. Obviously, this has happened before. It's not entirely unprecedented, but it was stunning nonetheless.
It is. There actually were some rumblings that he might not take the job Friday and Saturday.
Pro Football Talk was reporting. I'm going to make sure we credit him. Mike Florio was on top of the story. I don't know if others were as well, but we credit
where
it's due.
I'm not disputing that. I heard it elsewhere, but let's credit whoever. Yep. I can't credit who I heard it from because it was an anonymous source. But the bottom, I don't care. Give all the credit you want. The point is, there were some rumblings, there were some leaks, nobody knew what to believe, then the game happened, but then there was a meeting, I guess it was a phone call, between Jim Irsay and Chris Ballard and Josh McDaniels on Monday morning. They did work out the final details of the agreement, the terms of the contract, etc. They had a verbal, and then they announced that there would be a press conference on Wednesday. It was somewhere between that verbal, no contract was signed, and Josh McDaniels, I don't know if he reached out to Robert Kraft to thank him or to say goodbye or what it was all about, but Kraft and McDaniels ended up sitting down. McDaniels' Patriots contract was extended and upgraded. It's not clear whether he was given anything in writing or even verbally, but a guarantee that he will be the next head coach of the New England Patriots when Bill Belichick is done, and that was enough for him to decide he was staying right where he was at. It's interesting.
Did he burn 31 other bridges? Is it Patriots or bust now for Josh McDaniels as a future head coach? You can't get away with doing this.
Yeah, you can if you can run offenses like he can. Yeah, you can when you remember that for all the people who want to say he's a product of Tom Brady, that he made Matt Cassel a Pro Bowl quarterback and he didn't even have an off season. Brady tore his ACL the first game of the season.
No one doubts the offensive credentials already. The question is whether he can be
a
successful head coach.
When you've got those kind of credentials, there's somebody who's going to be willing to take a chance. He was never getting hired on. But I don't think it really matters. Because what he has said here is, I don't want the 31 other jobs. This is the job.
Right.
I'm going to stay here. I'm going to be the highest paid offensive coordinator in football for a couple more years if I have to. Money isn't really an issue because that first contract I get to coach the Patriots, I'm already going to be a multimillionaire. And I'm going to get, $20, $25 with my first contract. I think we all look at the Powerball or the Mega Ball and think we got to get $500 million. But, given the chance to earn, $10, $15 million, I'd take it and find a way to be happy. So I don't my sense is he doesn't care about the other 31 jobs. So,
the problem, I think, the biggest problem I have with this is that my sense is that he also didn't care about the guys that he reeled in to be on his staff, who now could not be more awkward, are going to remain as Colts. It's I'm going to butcher the name. Is it Eberflus with the Cowboys? Matt Eberflus. He's going to be the defensive coordinator, going from the linebackers coach of the Cowboys. I apologize for the pronunciation. I'm sure it's wrong. And then I think it's Mark Fair was going to come and coach the defensive line as an assistant. Those guys are staying now. They had already signed contracts. That is awful. I really... And there are reports that he was on the phone trying to get other guys.
They have contracts for those jobs.
He's convinced those men to uproot their families, to change their entire lives because they thought that they were working for him.
I don't agree with that. They thought they were getting better jobs. I find it hard to believe that it was all about the chance to work for Josh McDaniel, failed NFL head coach.
I think what you're saying. They still technically get promotions. Yeah, the guy becomes a defensive coordinator. The other guy goes, I think, from college to the defensive line. So I see what you're saying there, but I just – who knows if they wanted the opportunities without him.
I'm not saying it's a good thing. Right. I'm just saying that I'm not sure who we're holding a tag day for. I mean, these guys clearly – got promotions and got raises, or they wouldn't have made the moves that they made, or unless they were being fired, in which case they needed jobs anyway. So I'm not sure who really is getting burned here. I would think the people who he is close to in coaching circles also most likely will end up working for him, or maybe even for him and Belichick in New England. So it's a thing. I'm not disagreeing with you. I just don't think it's the end of the world.
Here are the other rumblings out there. Chris Mortensen reported Sunday that Andrew Luck is hardly out of the woods and may need another surgery on his shoulder, that might have been a factor in McDaniel's decision. And there is another report out there, and this makes sense, but I'll throw it back to you because I think as an owner, you have a lot of respect for Jim Irsay and what he's accomplished. A lot of speculation that his mercurial personality, that his, pick your word, the eccentric Jim Irsay was not someone that McDaniels at the end of the day was comfortable hitching his wagon to, compared to going from Foxborough and Robert Kraft and I guess the more stable situation that's there.
I think it's a possibility. Jim Irsay, eccentric, is certainly one word. There's other words you could use, but he is pretty much regarded as one of the best owners in the NFL to work for. I mean, his own personal life, he has his own personal issues.
Sure.
He deals with addiction. He's been through rehab a couple times. I've also heard reports in recent years his health may not be all that great, but at the end of the day, all you can do is weigh the people who've worked for him, mm-hmm. including the ones who've been fired, like Ryan Grigson and Chuck Pagano and even Bill Polian, and they will tell you that he's one of the best owners in the league to work for. So I don't think it was that so much. To me, what makes the most sense is if I ain't going to Indy for a healthy Andrew Luck, I ain't going at all,
mm-hmm.
because there's a ton of work to do there.
Yeah.
And the rest
of the division has
made
strides.
And I'll tell you something else. We got to know Chris Ballard a little bit here in Chicago because this is where he made his bones. I mean, Chris is a good guy. He's a good scout. He's probably going to be a good GM. But he can be there's a pretty big ego and a pretty sometimes difficult negotiation going on there as well.
Right.
And so
And that doesn't make him unique. You can't be an NFL general manager, head coach, or coordinator without an ego.
Yeah,
I just don't think it's possible.
Well, I'm not sure Ryan Pace has one here in Chicago, and there are others that I've run into.
It's rare.
But yes, it is. Some are bigger than others, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. And I just, only because we're in Chicago and I see Ryan a little bit more, but there's other guys that I could quickly think of for you who would fit that category. But what I'm trying to get back to here is that if I'm Josh McDaniels and I do what I did, it's about Andrew Luck.
Mm-hmm.
If there is a chance that Andrew Luck isn't going to be 100%, at least 99%, then I am in no big hurry to make that move.
And again, that was Chris Mortensen's report from Sunday that there is concern about his recovery at this point, or new concerns. So that stinks. I mean, Andrew Luck's good for the league, not just good for the Colts. We hope he can make a full recovery. And the last part of this, we only got a couple minutes left, but we'd be remiss if we didn't mention Chris Ballard's consolation surprise. What's going to happen next? Does this open the door again for Dave Tobe? And we should mention, as we were taping our TV show this morning on Wednesday, apparently Chris Ballard held a press conference and really handled himself professionally and was very eloquent in explaining the situation and where things stand. But I'm pretty sure he didn't name any candidates who are now coming in for interviews. Every one of the interviews that he conducted outside of Josh McDaniels have now landed head coaching jobs. Everyone that was on his original list, actually with the exception of the Baylor head coach Thule, who said he's going back to Baylor, and he was the shocker for everyone on the list.
Arthur, I think in fairness, most teams all had the same list. I mean, you look at all the names. And
that's actually what made Ballard unique, was bringing in the Baylor guy, because he was out of left field.
Yeah, but as far as the rest of them all getting jobs, that's most of everybody's guys got
but
jobs.
But it means he's now going to settle for a seventh or eighth choice, you know?
We don't know that. You know, I mean,
there's no reason they wouldn't have been on the first round of interviews.
Well, we know it's going to be a second choice. I mean, you know, he was done interviewing because he settled on Josh McDaniels, and didn't work out. Again, I'm not disputing you. It's a fair point. I think Dave Tobe is an easy assumption for everybody because people I talk to are stunned that he wasn't getting interviews, that he doesn't already have a job, that he would be great. Now, if you know Dave, the one issue is, here again, it's a personality thing. Dave can be a little prickly is the word, and not a prick by any means, but prickly is the word that we're trying to use here. Mm-hmm. And when you deal with that 24/7, as you do in an NFL environment, that's been the one concern I've heard from some of the folks who have interviewed him. You talk to anybody who played for Dave Tobe in Kansas City and Philadelphia and Chicago, they swear by him. And so I think it would be an excellent, and full disclosure, he's a friend of mine. He was based in Chicago for 9 years. We got involved together in a particular charity group, the Midtown Education Foundation, that we spent some time together with. I got to know him a little bit. And I'd love to see him get a chance. I do think he will be an excellent head coach. I am stunned that more special teams coordinators don't get these opportunities. When you look at the high hit rate with the few who have and how successful they've been, Dick Vermeil, Marv Levy, everybody knows about Mike Ditka. Bill Belichick started
John
with special
Harbaugh.
Teams, John Harbaugh. So, but that said, it looks a little funky if he didn't get the interview and now he's the choice. But where else are you going to go?
He's a prickly man. He's probably also a pretty prideful man. So I wonder if the phone does ring now.
You don't turn these down. No,
there's only so many chances.
I hear that all the time. It's an exclusive club, man, and it's hard to get one of these. And now, Josh McDaniels could turn it down because he had choices. You know, could Dave Tobe, if he's the guy, say, now, wait a minute, you know, I've waited this long. If I'm going to fail here, do I want to do this? Mm-hmm. Now, you know, I know that he and Chris have a good relationship, so it's certainly a logical place to look. But I don't think Chris Ballard can afford to just suddenly now leap and make that move. I think that, you know, he's got to take a step back as well. Is there anybody else I want to interview? Yeah, the reality is sometimes I think this stuff is overrated. You know, I don't think that the Colts are going to lose a season because of this. They're going to be a little bit behind the eight ball. They're going to have to move quickly. But as you point out, they'd already hired some assistants, you know, and it's obviously guys that Ballard approved of or he wouldn't have let it happen.
Right.
And by the way, they can fire him. You know, Jim Irsay's got plenty of money. So if that's the issue, I think this will all be okay. I think it was handled poorly by McDaniels. It's going to be something that we're going to talk about forever. And of course, we're going to watch very closely whoever does get this Colts job as to how they do.
Yeah.
Actually, there's an advantage to it. You get a little longer honeymoon. You know, you got a built-in excuse for a slow start.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we just got to let the next step play out now, and then we'll start to evaluate depending on how it plays out.
No earth-shattering additional suggestions, but certainly the guys in Philadelphia who didn't land jobs, John DeFilippo, maybe Frank Reich gets an interview now. Jim Schwartz even coming off that defensive performance in the Super Bowl. He's got some skins on the wall, obviously. And then, I'm sorry, this isn't my initial suggestion. I believe it was NFL Media said it last night. Leslie Frazier, a former Super Bowl-winning assistant under Tony Dungy with the Colts, has a relationship with Jim Irsay, could make some sense if they were looking to go the retread route.
I know Les. I love Les. I think there's a reason it didn't work out in Minnesota. I think Les is a coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
Another name I would throw out there just because I was really surprised he didn't get more consideration. I know he's got a new defensive coordinator job, but James Betcher is a name I keep an eye on too because I think he was a real strong candidate.
Got passed over in Arizona for Steve Wilks, but has done a nice job despite all the turnover in Arizona in recent years since he took over for Todd Bowles. So
I'll tell you, the first guy making a phone call, Jeff Fisher keeps telling people he thinks he's going to get another job. Jeff is a friend. We're not good friends, but he's somebody, my first year on the broadcast side was actually 85 when I did the Bears pre and post and halftime, and Jeff was on the injured reserve list that year. He was with that team. But I knew Jeff way back as a player, and I've known him through the years, and I actually a dear friend is his closest confidant in coaching is Dave McGinnis. I would love to see these guys get another chance, but Jeff Fisher doesn't seem to understand that he's not going to be at the top of anybody's hot list right now.
It would be a fitting conclusion to this bizarre story. What could be more bizarre than Jeff Fisher landing the last vacancy in early February? We'll see, guys. We're going to stick with the story, of course, at ProFootballWeekly.com. As I mentioned, the draft magazine is about to be finished, and we're very proud of this year's edition. So we encourage you to go find one. If not on newsstands, check it out at our site. And make sure you subscribe to this cool draft newsletter we're doing as well. It's 5 days a week. It's exclusive information that you can't get anywhere but by signing up for the newsletter. And it's something else we're really proud of this draft season. So that's going to do it for this PFW podcast. For Hub Arkish, I am Arthur Arkish. For Dan Mott, our producer, thank you guys so much for being with us. And we will talk to you again very soon on the Pro Football Weekly podcast.